Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, that's pound 529, from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. I am Dave Ross here at Circus Sports Fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. He is our GM, Michael Lombardi, back in the East Coast in Jersey. Michael, you stayed up late. It was a Monday Night Football. I don't know what it looked like for the majority of the game, Michael, but in the end of the day, the Steelers win again. The quarterback change to Russell Wilson looks like it's working. What do you make of the 6-2 Steelers with another primetime victory last night?
Well, I just kept saying to myself during the entire game, Scott Novak, Scott Novak, Scott Novak, you know, and then Daniel Jones, Daniel Jones, Daniel Jones, you're an idiot, you're an idiot, you're an idiot. You combine Daniel Jones with Scott Novak and you think you're going to get a positive result? I mean, seriously, how stupid are you, right? I mean, to me, this is a game that was there for the taking for the Giants. Yeah. But once again, we're reminded that Daniel Jones can't play fast. He can't think on his feet, you know. And for all the conversations, David, that we heard from the Giant front office, Joe Shane, we have to protect Daniel Jones. They went into the game with two really bad tackles, Illuminor and whoever they put over. Hubbard started the game out. Then they went to number 70 over there who couldn't block anybody. So they had no tackles. Jones can't make a good decision. And, of course, Scott Novak takes away the only touchdown that they had in the first half. For I never saw the illegal motion. Who knew what it was? But You know, as the great Bill Belichick would often say, you get what you deserve. I deserve this in recommending a game that featured Scott Novak and it features Daniel Jones. And I can't tell you if the Steelers are any good because those two things can mask a lot of bad.
Again, Troy Aikman on the broadcast last night was right there with you, Michael. He did not see the penalty call. And, you know, you're trying not to criticize the league. You're protecting the shield and all those things. You're on the broadcast if you're Aikman. I think he was as confused as you were as to where that call was. Look, I actually thought you were on the right side. I mean, it takes the special teams touchdown, punt return for the Steelers to get the first touchdown of the game. Because at that point, it was all field goals for both sides. So I kind of felt like it was the right play. And remember, the Giants go for two with the new math in the NFL when they're down 14, right? And they cut it to 8.
I don't understand. I mean, I don't understand that at all. But the play that killed him, you want to know what hurt him more than anything that drove me bat crazy when I'm watching the game alone on my couch with no volume, was the drive in the second half. They've got the ball in field goal range, right? And I swear this is one of my pet peeves, okay? I tell every coach that I talk to, young coach, old coach, that in every quarterback room, you need a football field on a whiteboard. And you need to black out areas where a quarterback can't take a sack because he's giving up points. And, of course, Daniel Jones takes two sacks. They go from 1st and 10, where they're in field goal range, to 4th and 22, where they have to punt. And those 3 points is really what killed me.
Yeah.
Losing those 3 points, it's 26-21. That's where he lost the game. Or at least I lost the cover. To me, that's where you have to have, you know, you are sitting here, you're making $40 million a year. You put the call in. You can't take a sack. You just can't. You know, and as a play caller, you got to remind the quarterback, you can't take a sack. But they go backwards on that drive, right? They go backwards on that drive. They ended up, you know, they moved the ball, and then they lost yards. They got two first. It was the first drive of the game, and they got to punt the ball away. And to me, it was the killer. It was really what hurt them more than anything. But it's the little things, right? It's those little things that, you know, no one, oh, he got sacked. Like, it's not his fault. No, it's his fault. The ball's got to come out. It's the play caller's fault. The ball's got to come out. We can't take a sack. You got T.J. Watt lined up over. Why do you think they moved T.J. Watt over to the left tackle side? Oh, because he wanted a different sun view. It was the lights in his eyes. They moved him over there because you got some horrible player playing over there, and they wanted to feast on him. It's like a lion in the den, you know? So you got this guy over there. You don't have anybody helping him. Oh, he's over there for no reason? Come on. I mean, that's really bad. That's really bad. And for me, that was the game. And that's why I've been critical of the Giants for 5 years. They've been trying to convince themselves that Daniel Jones is good. And it just reinforces the entire weekend, David, where we are told these lies by these teams that nothing comes true. We're told that Deshaun Watson wasn't the problem. Mm. Lie. We're told Anthony Richardson's getting better. Lie. We're told Daniel Jones is improving. Lie, lie. Like, it's a joke.
I looked at it very similarly, certainly from the offensive tackle standpoints that you mentioned. They do not have tackles right now that are NFL caliber. And it shows, because you're right. Highsmith on one side, Watt on the other. Watt made the ultimate game-changing play at the end, because you're going to get a backdoor cover potentially after you get the Russell Wilson turnover late, still down 26-18. By the way, the over does cash with those late touchdowns, because remember, it's 9-9 at halftime with all field goals. And then you get the turnover late with Russell, and you feel like you're right there in position, still down 8. And then Watt does what Watt does and just beats your left tackle, strip sack, fumble, and recovers. I mean, does everything on one play to save the day for the Steelers. You know, you look at Tracy, and he's having a monster day, averaging over 7 yards a carry. He goes out with a concussion late in that game, too, which kind of changed it, because it really looked like they had something going running the football inside. But with those tackles.
But not with Singletary.
Right, not with Singletary.
With Singletary, who you couldn't wait to sign. You couldn't wait to sign him, right? You go and give Singletary $8 million a year or $6 million a year. You couldn't wait to sign him. You think about it. I'm watching that game. I'm saying, if you put Barkley on this field today, it might be a different game. Look, I think Tracy's a really good player, and it's a great alternative. You'd have a 1-2 punch that's second to none. But now you couldn't wait to sign him. Of course, you had to overpay Illuminor at right tackle. You had to overpay Van Roten at right guard. Both of them are marginal players at best. I mean, and then John Mara comes out and says, well, I'm going to stick to the course. I mean, you got two players on their team that can't even get on the field. I mean, the Banks, the corner, he won't tackle anybody. He was a first-round pick of Shane. Mm. And then you got sitting over there on the bench, Evan Neal. He's nice and toe. He's warmed up over there. He did more for that. I did more for the game than he did. I mean, he doesn't do anything.
But that's the problem,
they're
right?
They're two first-round picks.
Yeah. That's the bigger problem, right? When you are those lineman picks and they don't work out, that really sets your, I mean, obviously it's quarterback first, everybody's going to look at, but man, when you can't block these guys, and they could not block on the edge, but you're right. Tyrone Tracy last night, 20 for 145, averaged 7.3 yards per carry, and did have the touchdown, a 45 yarder as well. And then Singletary, to your point, Michael, two carries for 11 yards. That's it for Singletary. So he's not even getting run. And then obviously you go to Malik Nabers outside, 7 receptions, 71 yards, had the touchdown call back, as we saw there as well. So, yeah, 2-6 for the Giants. I don't know where they go from here. They've got a lot of retooling to do. You did pay Daniel Jones. Gave him a new deal. So I don't know if you're married to him. I do think it's interesting, though. Michael, if they cut bait from Daniel Jones, what is Daniel Jones in the NFL in other executives' eyes? Is this a bridge quarterback?
He's a backup.
He's a backup.
I mean, he's probably I would say he's an $8 million to $10 million. He's a quality backup. You could put him in the game, you know, but he doesn't play fast. You've got limitations. He's not as good as Ryan Tannehill, right? So he never really has done what Ryan Tannehill's done in his career. Mm. So you can't really say, well, he could be found. I mean, they've been trying. I mean, I think Daboll really had a wonderful game plan last night. I think it was what Belichick said on the Manning cast. It was screens and draw. One of the reasons I played the game, I thought it would be a good, is because I know from my experience in New England that the Patriots and their offensive scheme understand how to attack the Steelers. And I think it was pretty evident on the tape. I think it was pretty evident. They had the Steelers reeling.
Yeah.
You know, and if they would have had a better quarterback, and if he could make any throws down the field, you know, he misses Slayton on a cover two hole early in the second quarter. That was just, I mean, that's just an easy throw and catch there. And he overthrows him, you know, where it makes almost Slayton gets his ribs taken out. Mm. But to me, I think that was why. And I think you're right. There are games you recommend that, and I'm not defending myself here, because I got sucked into the Scott Novak and the Daniel Jones curse. But to me, I think this was exactly what what I thought would happen. I thought they would move the ball. I don't think the Steelers are invincible. I think you can move the football. I think the Steelers are just, look, I'm going to write a column today for VSiN. If Mike Tomlin woke up in Cincinnati and Zach Taylor woke up in Pittsburgh and went to work to coach the Steelers and Mike went to coach the Bengals, the outcomes would be completely different. The Steelers would be everything we think they are in terms of talent. They would probably be a 4-win team. They would be soft. They wouldn't be able to run the ball. They would have no identity, and they would try to throw it all over the lot with Russell Wilson. Meanwhile, in Cincinnati, they'd be physical, tough. They'd run it. They'd play good defense. So to me, this is really about Tomlin's just way to find, you know, ways to win the game. The punt return just was unbelievable. You punt the ball down the – I mean, it's one of Belichick's pet peeves. You punt the ball down the middle of the field, you get what you deserve.
Yeah, and that was the turning point of the game for Austin to take that back. Then, of course, he had a receiving touchdown as well. In this 26-18 victory, I'm with you. I actually thought the Giants in the 6.5 was the right side. Didn't get there. Doesn't mean all good bets win. But I thought that was the right analysis of the game. And again, 2-point conversion gets you there, or even a late backdoor touchdown there after the turnover. But they don't get those, and the Steelers do move on to 6-2. Very quickly, Michael, on the other side of this coin here, and we'll talk more about the Steelers as the show goes on. We're going to have Matt Heumann is going to join us in studio a little bit later on this hour. Jonathan Von Tobel is going to join us in hour number two as well. So we've got a great show lined up on this edition of the Lombardi Line. But I look at Russell Wilson on the other side. Now, that late turnover, kind of a little bit perplexing, but this is why Tomlin made the change, right? They looked like they had some deep shots down the field that they couldn't take with Justin Fields.
No, and he looked like he was in better command and better control. Look, he got sacked 4 times, too.
Yep.
You know, that's the funny thing. You know, the Giants lead the league in sacks. They can't make a turnover. See, that's why sacks are ridiculous. Sacks are the most overrated stat in football. You know, yeah, you get off the field. It's great. You sack the quarterback. But what you want is hurries. Hurries allows the quarterback to throw the ball early, and you get interceptions. And that's where the Giants don't have any. They can't cover anybody. I mean, this is really a bad situation for them because they struggle to cover. And I think ultimately at the end of the day, you know, sacks are great, but, you know, I think Wilson did a good job of handling it. You know, I mean, look, every time you turn around, they're getting 7 yards on first down.
Let's dig deeper on this game here when we come back and continue the Lombardi Line here on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi with you on a Tuesday. And Michael, it is the rumors are true. We've got Matt Heumann in studio. You know him, you love him. VSiN Primetime, college football betting podcast. And first thing, Michael, just like you were saying about Scott Novak, Matt, we were kind of lamenting some of these calls last night in this Giants-Steelers game. So we kind of leaned G-men last night, didn't get home with the money, 6.5. Not going to blame it all on the officials here, but what's your takeaway from that Steeler win last night?
Well, there's a lot of takeaways from the game last night, and you know, we could talk for a half hour about that game. Seriously, I watched, went back and watched the tape again when I got home last night, and hey, look, first of all, the Giants just didn't get it done. They weren't good enough in the fourth quarter. Daniel Jones turns it over twice, and that turns out to be a difference. But hey, I took the Giants plus 6 as a contest play. And when you handicap these games, Michael, you always have, there are 3 teams on the field. And the third team, the officiating crew, has a big say in who's going to cover these games a lot of times. It seems like it's bigger all the time. There's so many flags. Last night, 11 accepted penalties on the Giants. And I think one of the turning points in the game is when the Giants punter got run into. You could say running into the kicker, roughing the kicker, whatever. I know Peyton Manning said on the Manning cast, he just took the kicker's leg out.
Yeah, no call.
No call, no flag. All the flags we see flying all night, all the little stuff they call 2 Giants touchdowns, called back on penalties on technical stuff, and no call on that, and the Steelers take it back 73 yards for a touchdown. You know, so
it's amazing.
There are so many variables that come into play, and the officiating just becomes a bigger and bigger part of this, and you know, who's covering. Also, I have to mention that the Giants failed to execute maybe the worst 2-point conversion play I've ever seen in NFL history last night.
Yeah.
What was that?
What was that?
I mean, that was horrendous. I mean, Dominic, my 7-year-old grandson, could draw something better than that. I mean, that was absurd. I mean, what are we doing here? This is professional football. I mean, we're doing the swinging gate, Pee-wee. I mean, you got a quarterback who can run around a little bit, right? You're always worried about quarterback draw with Daniel Jones. I mean, not that Daboll's called it 100 times. I mean, he'll call it twice in the same series. He don't care. So, I mean, what are we doing? And then, I mean, Neighbors got tackled before he even got the ball. Nobody even knew what the snap count was. That was really atrocious. But look, you know, as you said, you deserve what you get. I mean, Daniel Jones is 2 sacks when they're in field goal range. It's another one of those underlying, the secret to all victory lies in the organization of the non-obvious play right there, right? Mm-hmm. He takes 2 sacks and they go from being in field goal range to punting on 4th and 22. I mean, it's just really bad. So, you know, you lick your wounds. Talk about really bad. You know, I had the 2 things going. I had the World Series game on, and then I had the game on. No volume. Life was really good. The only thing I heard was Bella snoring. But Freddie Freeman, oh, my God. Oh. I mean, what are we doing pitching to this guy, Matt?
You know, last night when Freeman hit that homer in the first inning, we checked the live line on World Series MVP. And even after the home run, Freeman was still minus 200 at DraftKings. I said, you got to bet that right now because that's way underpriced.
You got to bet that right now.
Yeah,
I don't even bet, but I would bet that one. That's obvious, right?
Yeah, minus 200. And then by the end of the game, I think it was up to minus 1,000.
Minus 1,000.
Type of bet you got to jump on immediately because he had 3 home runs in the series at that point, including a walk-off grand slam. He's going to be MVP.
Yeah.
You got to lay that 2-1. But, the Yankees have made so many mistakes in this World Series, and most of them fall on Aaron Boone. So they're not going to recover. You know, we'll talk a little bit about tonight's game, but the Yankees down 3-0. No, they're not going to make a comeback. They're not going to get inspired and make a comeback. The only question now is, can they avoid the sweep?
Well, that's the question now. Luis Gil is going to be on the bump here for the Yanks in game 4 tonight. And, you know, you get Shohei Ohtani back last night. If you're the Dodgers, really looked like he didn't want to swing a whole lot. Not sure about that shoulder. But even the presence of Ohtani, you saw it in the first inning, 4 pitches, didn't even have to swing. That leads to the 2-run shot by Freeman. Just having Ohtani in the lineup makes a difference, right? I mean, as far as handicapping this game, he's still going to be batting leadoff.
Yeah, Ohtani's worth maybe 10 to 15 cents to the line, something like that. But, you know, he's compromised right now. And you could tell last night the way he was, you know, his expressions, he was in pain after some of those swings. But what it comes down to in this series is the Yankees have been so ineffective offensively. When you got Aaron Judge out there looking like Judge Judy. And I don't know what you can do at this point when your MVP is not delivering. Aaron Judge, I wrote down these numbers last night, 1-for-12 with 7 strikeouts in the World Series. In the postseason, 6-for-43, batting 140 in 12 games. You're not going to go far when your MVP is hitting or not hitting like that. The Yankees have 7 runs in 3 games.
Oh, boy.
4-for-20 with runners in scoring position and 31 strikeouts. That's 14 more strikeouts than the Dodgers at this point. Hey, bottom line, Dodgers just a more complete team, better all-around team. I picked the Dodgers in 6. Right now, the Yankees are going to be lucky if they go down on 5 because tonight they got Luis Gil starting. This is the first time he has pitched at Yankee Stadium in a month. The last time he took the mound in the Bronx, September 28th against the Pirates, and he allowed 4 home runs.
Oh, boy.
And that's the guy who you're counting on tonight to help you avoid the sweep. And, you know, I think a lot of bettors are going to say, well, I'm gonna lay it here with the Yankees. They got to win this tonight and avoid the sweep. I don't think I'm going to lay it. In fact, how about this? The last 9 teams that were up 3-0 in the World Series completed the sweep.
Wow. And by the way, guys, we know this tonight's going to be a bullpen game for the Dodgers. And I know to Matt's point here, I was like, oh, I got to lay the $1.42 here with the Bombers. Michael, you know all about that, just kind of that pressure. And we thought, man, if maybe the Yankees, they could score first in game 3. Maybe it shifts the pressure. That didn't happen. Now it feels like all the pressure's on the Yankees. I don't know how they get out of it if Judge doesn't get one of those big hits to alleviate the pressure. They're all looking at the superstar like we do with the quarterbacks in the NFL.
Michael, at this point, you think with Aaron Judge, it's a psychological thing too? I mean, obviously, he's thinking about it every time he goes up there, his slump.
Yeah, I mean, you could feel impression. I could feel him. I mean, you're expecting him to have this game, and he just, you know, I mean, he's not even, when they show the replay of him swinging, I mean, he's like a, you know, he's too far. The ball's like either below the bat or above the bat. It's really kind of interesting how it just never even comes close to it. So it's a little bit like when you watch the Indianapolis Colts play, Matt, and you see, you know, I was watching their tape yesterday. I've never seen a quarterback in all my life who, when he throws an incomplete pass, the defense gets their hands on the football. On almost every incomplete pass, everyone. It's not even that Richardson doesn't throw the ball accurately. It's that the defense makes plays on the ball every single time. There's passes broken up. You know, I used to bitch about Baker Mayfield. He used to average six passes broken up a game when he was in Cleveland because, you know, you don't want your defensive players getting their hands on the ball. But Richardson, he stares down the receivers and they go to it, and you could see it. And so it's the same thing with Judge. I mean, Judge is like, it's not even close to hitting the ball.
Yeah, Anthony Richardson at one point in that Texans game was, what, 9 for 26 passing? And you just don't see this from NFL quarterbacks, this type of
We've had two, Matt, this weekend. Caleb Williams completed 10 passes and Richardson completed 10 passes. And we're talking about Caleb Williams being a generational talent. Look, I think Caleb's really good. He's, if you look at his pitching chart or his throwing chart, if you will, the balls are all behind the line of scrimmage or within 10 yards. That's his accuracy portal. When he throws it over 10, it's not very good. Meanwhile, Richardson, two of the completions of his 10 were bubbles. I mean, so really only completed 8 passes. I mean, it was horrendous. And if you're going to keep playing them, like, I don't know what your thoughts on this weekend, but they go into Minnesota, you know, with blitzing and all that. I mean, how are you going to play him against Brian Flores? Now, their secondary hasn't played well in Minnesota, but that line's at 6.5. I think as long as it stays under 7, you know, are you going to be able to handle it? Remember the last time they went up there, Minnesota had the huge lead?
Yeah.
And, I mean, Indy had the huge lead under the great Jeff Saturday coaching, and then all of a sudden, you know, Minnesota came roaring back.
It's down to 6, I'm seeing in some spots here. So the Colts are taking a little bit of the money here.
Yeah, I think where Caleb Williams was.
I think
was,
I'd wait, Matt. I wait on that.
Williams was, what, 10 for 24?
Yeah.
And I think Richardson was about 10 for 30. You just don't see those type of inaccurate quarterbacks in the NFL. You're not going to win with quarterbacks who throw the ball like that. The Colts have a quandary. First of all, they screwed up when they drafted Anthony Richardson that high. Anybody who watched him in college knew he was a mediocre college quarterback. He was just a freak athlete. Colts drafted him too high. Now, if he's supposed to be your franchise quarterback, you have to develop him. You have to play him.
Yeah.
And you're hoping you can win games at the same time, but they're not going to win many games with Richardson, the quarterback, and Joe Flacco gives him a better shot. But the Colts are going to be stubborn about this and try to develop Richardson. I don't think he's ever going to make it, and here's why. He's always going to be injured. The only way he's going to be an effective quarterback is if he runs. And right now, Shane Steichen's not doing a great job molding that offense to what fits Anthony Richardson's talents, right? He's got to run the ball 15, maybe 20 times a game if he's going to give the Colts a chance to win. He ran the ball, what, 6 times against the Texans? And he can't put it in the air 30 times and think the Colts are going to win. I'm not going to bet the Colts.
By the way, gentlemen, to Michael's point here, this number keeps coming down. It's down to 5.5 in some spots. So, look, if you're going to back the Vikings here, keep waiting if this thing keeps dropping, because I don't understand the money move here.
I'm not betting the Colts.
Right, going towards the Colts.
Betting the Colts, watching the Colts play is 3 hours of misery. Between Gus Bradley's defense and Anthony Richardson, it's 3 hours of just pure, unfiltered misery. And you're screaming at the TV the whole time. And my wife's like, why are you so mad? I'm like, oh.
I'm watching Colts football.
It's so bad.
Matt, sticking around. Get your best bets coming up here for Week 9. It is the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We continue the Lombardi Line here, Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi. A pleasure to have Matt Youmans join us here for another segment. Of course, does a great job on VSiN Primetime College Football Betting Podcast. And also, Matt, college basketball. People forget college football. You've got the contest going on Friday nights, but we have college basketball getting ready to start here as well. I mean, this is kind of for betters. It doesn't get a whole lot better. We got World Series, NFL, of course, college football, and college basketball is right here too.
Some people call this the sports equinox,
Dave. I've heard that, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, next Monday night, you're going to have about 80 college basketball games on the schedule. Wow. You're asking me if I'm out playing golf. No.
Yeah.
We've got football, basketball games to handicap, World Series. You got all sorts of stuff going on. I don't have time to go out and play golf. I wish I had your schedule, apparently.
I was going to try to get you to come out and play nine with me, but you're too busy talking college basketball.
No, college hoops right around the corner. Yeah. The VSiN college basketball betting guide's out. 133 pages. We had a bunch of different writers work on this and handicap it, and a lot of valuable information in there. So we did the work, so you don't have to. It's kind of like the cheat sheet. You can read it all, and I put my top 50 power ratings in there. And I'll tell you one team. I really, when I finished my ratings, I said, man, Duke is going to be really, really good. And I've got Duke power rated number 4 in the country.
Wow.
Duke and Gonzaga are two teams I'm really high on coming into the season. But read all about it in the College Hoops Guide. It's out now, vsin.com/subscribe.
And again, the Sports Equinox. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I was just going to ask him about how hard was it with the transfer portal. Mm. It's so difficult to really kind of match this whole thing up. That I think any novice college basketball fan or is someone into it, it's hard to keep up with the portal and know exactly what the strength of these teams are. And I think if it's any indication from football – how the portal is balanced. I mean, we're seeing teams with two losses that are going to get in the top 12 because the balance of football in college football is real. I mean, there is parity in college football. And I think the same thing that's going to apply in basketball, don't you?
Yeah, it is. It's an unrestricted free agency. You know, and you get so much player movement over the summer when you're handicapping college football, it makes your head spin, all the player movement, and you're trying to catch up with who's playing where. Well, here's the thing with college basketball. It took me a longer time than usual working on all this because of all the player transfers and everything that's going on. It's also a fluid situation. You know, with handicapping something like this, you're constantly learning about these teams, and that's why you got to watch as many games as possible in the month of, you know, November and December, because you're going to be changing your ratings and adjusting things. You think you know the personnel now. You know it the best you can. But like Michael says, there's so much free agency movement now that you can't possibly know how these teams are going to come together. When you have a team like Indiana Hoosiers, you know, they hit the transfer portal and they've got like 7 new players. How's that going to fit once they put them on the floor? You just don't know that. A lot of times it looks really good on paper, and then when you see it on the field or on the court, it just doesn't materialize. So
how's Red Autry and Syracuse looking this year?
I did not have Syracuse in my top 50.
They should always be in the top 50?
No.
Is this still America? Again, don't forget Sports Equinox. You can check it out here if you become a VSiN Pro subscriber through May 1st. You're going to get your daily best bets, betting splits, trends, analysis. Again, great work by Matt Humans here in the College Basketball Betting Guide. You get all of this for $20, less than $20 a month. So it is a limited time offer. You go to VSiN.com/subscribe. You sign up now. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Yeah, the Sports Equinox is upon us. We don't know how much longer that's going to go with baseball. Could end tonight with Game 4 of the World Series. Matt, let's get back to the NFL, though, because I know you do have some plays. Michael and I touched upon it a little bit. We saw this line move in the Texans and Jets game here on Thursday night. Jets are now getting some of the money here, up to 2-point favorites. We know the Texans are really banged up, but do you trust team turmoil in prime time on a Thursday night?
I don't trust. I don't trust many NFL teams right now. How many teams can you trust? There's not too many.
Yeah.
So I am going to give the Jets one more shot. This is it, because they're catching so much crap from all angles this week. Everybody's bashing the Jets. Every show you turn on, everything you read, everybody's bashing the Jets, and it's well-deserved. Aaron Rodgers deserves to be bashed. How about that supposed top 5 defense we talked about coming into the season that allowed Jacoby Brissett to drive right down the field and win the game Sunday in Foxborough? There's a lot of things wrong with the Jets right now, but sometimes you got to buy on bad news, and that's what I'm going to do here with the Jets, because the Texans, they're underachieving. You know, I know they're 6-2, but Michael, they got 5 wins by 6 points or fewer. And when Anthony Richardson is that bad on Sunday, the Texans still win a home game by only 3. You know, I do think there's a little bit something wrong with this Texans team. And this is it, though. This is going to be my last shot with the Jets here, Michael.
Well, I do think, look, the Texans got the biggest break. I don't know how many more times we're going to watch Shane Steichen screw up the end of the half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how many more times I'm going to, like, if I were the general manager of the Colts, I would be losing my mind. The interception at the end of the half, I think there's 19 seconds on the clock.
where are we going? He completed like two passes. They didn't convert a third down, and he throws a pick. He throws an interception, which essentially cost them the game. They had the ball was in field goal. I mean, it was right there. Remember, you know the play I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course.
Right at the end of the half. So I'm with you. As bad as Richardson played, and of course he gave them points, this team, we don't know where Diggs' injury is going to be. They're not the same team without Nico Collins. He won't play. This offensive line for Houston looked really bad last week. I mean, they were not good. The left guard, Green, was horrible. They got pushed back. I mean, Stroud was really good. I thought Stroud rose his level of play from prior weeks. I thought he was really good. But I'm with you, man. I mean, if they can't win this, but look, I watched that Jet game against the Patriots. They can't separate. They have no, other than Garrett Wilson, they can't get open. I mean, Devontae Adams is always covered. He can complain all he wants, but he's always covered. He did nothing to the team's speed of the Jets whatsoever. And this offensive line for the Jets has to worry you a lot because you with Tyron Smith coming on a short week, Morgan Moses on a short week. I'm with you. That's my rationale has been with the Jets. I'm giving them one last chance. Mm-hmm. But boy, oh boy, the only way you could make sense of this is because of the Texans being as beat up as they are.
Right.
Yeah, I'm looking at a team maybe that has new hope, too. Speaking of chances, maybe their last chance now is Jameis Winston, the quarterback with the Browns. We saw the great comeback to get it done against the Ravens. Now they're catching two at home against the Superchargers coming in. Yeah. Boring Harbs, but they're figuring out ways to win games. But is this a good spot for the Browns at home?
I think so, because it's their third straight home game, too. And, you know, I really thought they were going to get a boost from the Jameis Winston situation. It didn't look like that team wanted to play for Deshaun Watson. Yeah. You know, just and you felt like the first game, especially the Browns, were going to get a big boost. But I actually, you know, the Browns had 401 total yards against the Ravens. The previous week, the Cleveland defense held Cincinnati to 223 total yards. Wow. You see some signs here of the Browns being a competent football team. And one thing that concerns me with the Chargers, Jim Harbaugh, Dave Ross, find somebody who loves you as much as Jim Harbaugh loves field goal attempts. He loves field goal attempts. And
he ain't passing points up, Matt.
He's not going to pass points up.
He's taking the points. I know. But the Chargers
he's taking the points. I commend him. I mean, like, look, and he went and he's winning. I mean, like, look, he's really is. He knows the strength of his team is his defense, and you know, and this is. I think you're right on this one. I think to me, I'm leaning Cleveland here. Cleveland, it's hard to run the ball in Cleveland. I don't think the Chargers will be able to run it. You know, I think to me, there's no doubt I want to play the Browns here. And then I think about Kyle Hamilton dropping Jameis Winston's interception. Right. And I think, would we be playing the Browns here if he caught that ball?
Well, you know, I know
we'd all be saying, that's Winston.
Well, in 2019, Jameis Winston had a season you're probably never going to see again. 33 touchdown passes and 30 interceptions.
You will never see that again.
That's who Jameis Winston is, you know. And the drop pick allowed the Browns a second chance to win that game. But I still see some things with the Chargers that I don't like. And we're going back to a week ago Monday when they had the five field goals and lost the game to Arizona 17-15.
Yep.
They were 3-for-12 on third down conversions against a bad New Orleans team, bad New Orleans defense. On Sunday, there was it's a team with a very small margin for error right now. And I do think the Chargers are going to get better. There's a lot of things I like about this team, but I don't like the way they're playing offensively right now. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball like Harbaugh wants to against this Cleveland defense. So that's going to create some problems.
I agree.
Something that Michael and I
talked about. How about Penn State, Ohio State, Matt? How about Penn State, Ohio State? I know we got to run here. We got about a minute and a half.
I think we're going to be the sucker here and take Penn State plus 3.5. Going to play the home dog. Nittany Lions lost 7 in a row to the Buckeyes. But I'll tell you what, did you watch the Nebraska-Ohio State game? Did you watch it?
A little bit. Yeah. Ohio State struggled mightily.
Ohio State 11.
They had a chance. Nebraska. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think Rayola's way overrated. I think he is so overrated. I really do. What do you think, Matt?
Well, as of right now, he's definitely – I mean, he's doing everything he can to mimic Patrick Mahomes, and he is no Patrick Mahomes. I mean, even the way he chews on his mouthpiece and everything, and styles his hair. What? But Ohio State had 11 first downs against Nebraska and really struggled offensively and trailed that game in the fourth quarter. I know there's questions about the Penn State quarterback situation and Drew Aller's health. I believe he's going to play from what I read last night. So I'm going to take the 3.5 here. I think Nittany Lions should be live as home dogs. By the way, great to see you and Michael Lombardi together again. Dynamic duo. Great to be in here today.
Well, it's great to have you in, man. Now get
out
of here.
Thank you, Matt, for coming. We appreciate it.
Yeah, go play nine holes.
Don't have time.
There he is, everybody. Matt Humans, check him out on VSiN Primetime. Michael, when we come back to begin hour number two, I'll figure out what's on your mind. That is next here on the Lombardi Line.